why we might need nonlinear components, kinds of nonlinear components, squared and centered and squared terms, their advantages and disadvantages. Then we'll look at how this fits into the system we have and how it gets applied to this particular model. Linear regressions generally do a good job because an awful lot of what we care about has at least some linear relationship. And so if you go after that relationship that's linear and something else, you at least get the linear part. And very often, we can't tell whether our small to medium effect size is because that's all the more strongly the variables are related, or that's all the more strongly they're linearly related. Thinking about nonlinear terms ought to be very much like thinking about interactions. If you don't put the interaction in the model, you can't possibly find one. And your assumption that a main effects model is a good idea isn't tested, it's required. Same thing with the nonlinear stuff. You can't find a nonlinear relationship if you don't put a nonlinear term into the model. So an awful lot of the time, we play the nonlinear hokey-pokey, just like we play the interaction hokey-pokey. You put it in, you take it out, you see if it matters. If you put it in and it doesn't contribute to the variance, it doesn't change the model, you don't learn anything from it, very often we simplify by taking it back out. And you can start a whole war about that, and we're going to talk more about that war later. The do you only include hierarchical effects that contribute, or do you put everything into every model and interpret around the nulls? And we'll tell you a little bit about both sides of that argument. Study skills of acquisition or any other accrual task, that's the largest category name that I know, is anything that's an accrual process where you're accruing things over times or over reps. You get a very similar pattern. Initial learning is slow, then speeds up, and learning rates seem to reach a point of diminishing returns. Depending upon when you run your study, if you run it from novelty to the onset of expertise, or if you run it from not novelty, already have to learn, until well into expertise, you can get phenomenally different ideas of the relationship between the same variable and the same criterion. But most of the time, if you run from novelty to expertise in performance, you get this two-part curve. And that's not a quadratic curve, that's a cubic curve. It's got two curves in it. But most of the time we find ourselves well served and even sufficiently served by being able to distinguish which of those we have and being able to distinguish them both from linear models. So signs you may need a nonlinear term. These are a couple of new slides I put in, and I admit that I was listening to some radio on the way home last night and heard some Jeff Foxworthy. You know, that signs that you may be a redneck. I'm afraid that my pedagogic choices here were influenced by that form of humor. Other models or analyses have found nonlinear components. Well, then you ought to be doing it too. If the models in your area are looking at interactions, you ought to be able to look at interactions. If the models in your area are looking at nonlinear relationships, you need to be able to follow along. Sort of a minimum requirement for playing in an area is being able to analyze at least as well as everyone else, maybe even better. Theories predict a nonlinear component. I can't tell you how many social psychology studies I ran as a graduate student where all of the theory included nonlinearities and interactions and indirect effects, and then they ran a multiple regression that had no moderators, no mediators, no nonlinear terms. There needs to be, in your repertoire, a capacity to fit whatever is being hypothesized. Another one is a little more of a surprise, sometimes a little more post hoc, is you had all kinds of reasons to believe a variable is related to the criterion, but it wasn't. Or it was less strongly related than you thought. A very common occurrence in program evaluation and in learning theory is when people run an ANOVA for years, they run ANOVAs. This group gets 10, this group gets 20, this group gets 30, this group gets 40, and we keep finding an effect for that amount of practice variable. And then we switch over to a study where we asked them how much they practiced, and it varied from 10 to 40. We have the same sort of range, but we plug it into a regression, and it's not significant. Or it's only kind of significant. Now remember, ANOVA is asking for mean differences without asking that those mean differences have a particular pattern. Regression is asking if there's a mean difference that follows a linear pattern. So there's a bunch of different reasons that a variable might not contribute as much to your model as you thought it would. Well, regression cannot tell the difference between no linear relationship and no relationship, no linear relationship and no relationship at all. If we look at these data and say the variables are not related, we are missing the boat. So we've got to be able to have something to do when we get surprised. And one of the forms of surprise is to check for nonlinearity. If this is the real effect, and we have found in ANOVAs that these two groups aren't different, and these groups are different from each other and from both of those, and we plug that model into here, our effect size is going to be much less here than there. Because the only thing that the regression is testing for is the linear relationship. And an awful lot of what's going on there is nonlinear. So, when you run into a variable that doesn't contribute the way you think it should, there's two things you ought to consider doing. Look at the nonlinear version of that variable, and look at interactions between that variable and the other variables. We saw a lot of examples when we were looking at factorials in the last semester, where there's no main effects, only interactions. So you put both variables into a main effects model and you get nada. You add the interaction term and it pops. What we get here is if you put this variable in its linear form, you would get nothing. If you add the quadratic, you're going to account for a lot of variance and improve the model. So there's a difference between should this variable be part of the model, and does this variable have a linear main effect? You got to be able to look at interactions. You got to be able to look at nonlinear terms. All of this boils down to me trying to talk you into the idea that this is worth the effort. Because there's a lot of effort that goes into models when you start looking at interactions and nonlinear terms. And I know that. If the y prime values, and it's always a good idea to print those y prime values out, or at least really look where the line ends up, are larger or smaller than possible. What happens if my multiple regression tells me that I've got a couple of graduate students with an X estimated GPA of 4.2? Is this cause for celebration or cause for concern? Well, if you've got a maximum score, and the regression model tells you that, you absolutely know that your data can't be above that. Or that if somebody has less than a zero. Can't be. So if you have impossible values, it may mean that the best fit line needs to curve. Or it might be that you've got a ceiling or floor effect that's measurement, which we can deal with, or you've got a skewness problem. Because one of the things that happens is that if you have some skew, if you have some skewing of one or both variables, that can drag these things off in a nonlinear trend. So sometimes what happens is you add the nonlinear term, you get the nonlinear effect, then finally you did what you should have done four analyses ago, which is go back and check to see if your data have any skewing problems, clean up your data, and you find out the nonlinear goes away. You might expect interactions, but you don't find them. The interactions that you know how to put into a model so far are only linear interactions. that the differences between the regression lines are slope. But the definition of an interaction is that the groups have different regression lines. And those regression lines can differ in slope or shape and still be what we would call an interaction. This is another example of something that happens when you go from ANOVA type analyses, where you took that quantitative variable and carved it up into ordered categories and stuffed it into an ANOVA, is that sometimes you find out that this show an interaction in an ANOVA. When you stick it into a regression, so that the only thing you're asking is if the slopes are different, the slopes aren't different, and you return a null for the interaction. You can get the same thing here. This will give you an interaction. Even though those straight lines are both flat and parallel, the real relationship is inverted quadratic for the blue and U-shaped quadratic for the green, and no one would say that the blue and the green are the same line. So, you got to be able to think about all of these things. If other people have done it, you got to be able to do it. If other people have hypothesized about it, you have to be able to analyze it. If you're getting impossible values, it might mean that you've got a skewness problem, or it might mean that you've got a fit problem. If you're not getting effects for linear relationships, both here and on the bottom, then those nonlinear relationships can add variance to the model, tell you more information, and be worthwhile, which is what we're really looking for here, because there's a lot of work that goes into doing these more complex models. Modeling these nonlinear relationships has two major forms: actually fitting mathematical function of the relationship and including nonlinear terms into linear regression. Most of us, most of the time, are going to find that putting nonlinear terms into the linear regression is sufficient. Unless you're doing very precise predictions with things that are interestingly more complicated than these kinds of curves, you don't really need to go to the whole new mathematical level of function fitting. SPSS now does some of that. It does it pretty well. But most of the time, what we're going to do is put nonlinear terms into linear regression, which is a card trick. Okay? It's a card trick, because the only thing we're allowed in regression is the additive combination of multiplicatively weighted terms. We have to find a way to slide nonlinearity into that. Well, we already found a way of sliding multiplicity into that. The interaction term is a product term. We'd see if the product term is linearly related to the criterion, which is the same as asking if the criterion has a nonlinear relationship to those two, if it has a multiplicative relationship to those two. We form the term out of them and then see if that term is linearly related. It really is a mathematical card trick. It's all algebra. We're going to do the same thing here. We're going to build a term that represents the quadratic part, and then we're going to ask if that quadratic term is linearly related to the model. God bless algebras. Without algebras, we couldn't do this, guys. The most common linear term, and the only one we're going to focus on right now, is quadratic. It comes in two kinds, cleverly labeled U-shaped and inverted U-shaped. The most common way of including the quadratic term into a linear regression model is to construct a new variable that's a squared term that is the square of the original variable. Take x, square it, say that's our squared term. You put the squared term in the model. To determine if it adds to the model, we're going to do the same things that we talked about before. We're going to look at the regression weight for that term. If the regression weight for that term is significant, that term adds to the model, and there's a nonlinear component. Or we can compare the model that includes the nonlinear term and the model nested in it that doesn't include the nonlinear term using an R-squared change F test. If there's a difference in the fit between the two models, the quadratic term adds something. And once again, they're the same damn thing. T squared equals F. One of the things that we want to talk about is the sign of the regression weight. So here is a U-shaped quadratic. Now, within the limits of my ability to draw, this thing should be flat and just curved. If there's a positive regression weight, you're going to get a U-shaped quadratic. And there's two ways of thinking about it. The quick and dirty way is to say the sign of the regression weight tells you about the slope on the big end of x. And that will always work. It's not complete, it's not really right, but it'll always work. What you want to do is think about that positive regression weight means that the tangential slope is becoming more positive as x increases. That's the mathematically correct way of thinking about it. If we have an inverted, then that tangential slope is becoming less positive as x increases. The way we can put that into the model is we just compute something called practice squared, which is practice times practice. Depending upon which version of SPSS you're working with, you might also find that these work. Both of these are Fortran 4 raised to the power of. Like I say, depending upon which version of SPSS you're working for, sometimes it likes the exponential star star. Sometimes it likes the caret. Then we would just enter in SPSS that the dependent variables perform. We would enter both practice and the square of practice. Two things. One, this mathematical process is not doing what you intended. And two, it can cause you real problems. First of all, the practice squared term really combines the linear and the quadratic trends into a single term. A quadratic only term will have the same DV values at each end of the predictor continuum with a hump in the middle. However, squaring makes initially larger values more larger or even larger than the initially smaller values. So 2 times 2 is 4, but 5 times 5 is 25. So what you're getting is a linear plus quadratic term out of that squared term. Now, when you put the linear term and the linear plus quadratic into a regression, the linear is linear with the quadratic taken out. The quadratic is the quadratic with the linear taken out. And so you end up with the right expression. The problem is that the practice and the practice squared are usually correlated with each other somewhere between 0.9 and 0.98. And they can have so much collinearity that it screws up the math. We showed you an example of that in 942. I'm going to remember and post that example in here too so you can go back and look at it. Basically what happens is that when you use that practice squared term, sometimes you get absolute nonsense. And the only way to tell for sure that you're getting absolute nonsense is if you look at the regression model and you look at the beta weights. The beta weights are bigger than 1. Beta weights got to range from negative 1 to positive 1. If you get a beta weight of 4, you've got a problem. And the reason that's a crisis is that many general linear model packages, including SPSS and SAS, don't publish the beta. They only publish the B. So you have a B that's nonsense and don't even have a tell that it's nonsense. So, even though you can find lots and lots and lots and lots of websites that tell you just square X and stuff it in there, don't you do it. So, the bivariate model using this constructive term won't be testing what you intended, and the multivariate model will have increased collinearity. This also informs us that in the multiple regression, the B for the quadratic term will be controlled for. You might not ever get that far because you've perturbed the math to the point that what you get is nonsense. And nonsense is a problem in this business. So is there a way to get a pure quadratic term? There sure is. Center the predictor, usually mean centering is used, and then square the centered score. Okay, so we're calculating a centered value, just square that centered value. How does this work? Consider two persons with scores equally far above and below the mean. So we got a mean of 10, one person's got an 8, 2 points below that, one person's got a 12, 2 points above that. After centering, they're now equally far from the mean, but with opposite signs. Person 1 is now 2 points below the mean, just like they were. Person 2 is 2 points above the mean, just like they were. When the centered scores are squared, they are now equally far from the mean in the same direction. So if we plot a pure quadratic on the original axis, on the mean centered axis, and then on the squared axis, squaring the centered value turns a quadratic into a linear. And that's our hook. Representing a nonlinear relationship as a term in a linear model. So the model itself doesn't capture the nonlinearity. The term captures the nonlinearity. The model only has to capture whether that term contributes or not. Thus, a quadratic trend between the criterion and the predictor is revealed as a linear trend between the centered and squared predictor and the criterion. Ta-da. I love ta-da.